It's nearly noon and time for the KMXT Midday News. Coming up on the Midday News, reactions to Justice Ginsburg's death. Save Anchorage. And what's new with the Donlin Gold Project? -51 degrees right now, in beautiful downtown Kodiak. We're looking for rain before 1 p.m. today, then showers after that. The rain could be heavy at times today. High near 54. Chance of precipitation is 100% today. Looking for showers tonight and rain tomorrow. A box of rain.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Donald Trump says he will announce his Supreme Court nominee Friday or Saturday. He told Fox and Friends today that he wants to wait until funeral services are complete for the late Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. He says he's looking at five potential nominees. NPR's Tamara Keith reports the White House and the Republican-controlled Senate are moving fast to fill the Supreme Court vacancy.
President Trump has narrowed down his list with Amy Coney Barrett, a judge on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, and Barbara Lagoa, who sits on the 11th Circuit, as the leading contenders. Over the weekend, Trump said both are highly respected.
If somebody were to ask me now, I would say that a woman would be in first place, yes. The choice of a woman, I would say, would certainly be appropriate.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell meets with his caucus on Tuesday. Already, two Republican senators say the result of the election should decide who chooses the next justice. But many of their colleagues have come out to say they think the Senate should move full steam ahead. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
The Democrats argue that a GOP vote before the election is blatant hypocrisy, since the Republicans refused to vote on President Barack Obama's Supreme Court nominee in the last year of his administration. But on the Senate floor today, McConnell remained undeterred.
We're already hearing incorrect claims that there is not sufficient time to examine and confirm a nominee. We can debunk this myth in about 30 seconds.
His home state of Kentucky was the scene of protests over the weekend against the GOP push to fill the vacancy before the election. The Trump administration is preparing to receive the defense minister of Israel, Benny Gantz. He's due to meet with U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper and other officials to talk about helping Israel maintain a military edge in the Middle East. The meeting comes weeks after Israel announced a landmark normalization agreement with the United Arab Emirates, and the UAE has said it is interested in buying F-35 warplanes and other advanced American-made weapons. Steep drop this afternoon in U.S. stocks, with the Dow down 510 points or 1.8%. NPR's Jim Zaroli looks at what's been driving the decline on Wall Street.
September has been a gloomy month in the stock market, and there's no sign that's letting up. Investors are worried about another surge of coronavirus cases, especially in Britain, where there's talk of more lockdowns. Meanwhile, the death of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the looming fight over who will replace her could scuttle another stimulus bill. Bank stocks are also being hit hard following a report this weekend from a coalition of news organizations. The report says that over the years, major global banks such as HSBC flagged some $2 trillion in suspicious transactions such as money laundering.
This is NPR News. More than 2 weeks after igniting and sweeping across 165 square miles, California's Bobcat Fire is just 15% contained. It's been burning through the mountains northeast of Los Angeles and has spread into the Mojave Desert. Fire crews caught a break when the wind that had been driving the flames calmed down a bit. Thousands of residents are still being advised to evacuate. Walmart says it will stop emitting greenhouse gases by 2040. NPR's Rebecca Hersher reports its latest corporate promise to combat climate change.
Walmart says it will cut carbon dioxide emissions in its supply chain down to zero in the next 20 years. That's a big decrease. In 2019, the company reported that it emitted more than 20 million metric tons of CO2, the equivalent of running 5 coal-fired power plants for a year. The company says it already uses renewable energy for about a third of its operations and will get to 100% in the next 20 years. Given how much food Walmart sells, greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture are also a big part of the pie. Walmart says it will, quote, protect, manage, or restore an area the size of Nebraska as part of its plan. The company has not committed to specific changes in its supply chain, such as selling only sustainably sourced foods. Rebecca Hersher, NPR News.
The CDC has taken down a warning on its website about possible airborne transmission of the coronavirus, saying the draft recommendation was posted in air. Meanwhile, the death toll from COVID-19 in the U.S. is nearing 200,000. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Twilio, a customer engagement platform used by millions of developers to reinvent how businesses communicate with their users. Learn more at Twilio.com. And the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
Bad weather in the forecast for the Barren Islands has put the Tustamina out of service until Thursday. Amanda Becker, the Kodiak Ferry Terminal manager, says the weather forecasted for this week will make seas bigger than what the Tustamina can currently handle safely. The ship's stabilizers, also called fins, have not been completely operational for some time and are generally not a problem in the summer months, but fall and winter weather usually means rougher seas. The next sailing of the Tustamina out of Kodiak will be this Friday. The Tustamina's last day in service this year will be September 30th. It's scheduled repairs over the winter that include fixing the stabilizers. The ferry won't sail again until at least April. In life, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was often at the center of controversy, and now in death as well, as President Donald Trump moves quickly to appoint a replacement to her seat on the U.S. Supreme Court before the presidential election. Elizabeth Fleming, a Kodiak attorney, feels strongly that the appointment should wait until after the election, just as Republican Senate majority leaders argued at the end of President Barack Obama's last term.
I am very worried about losing her voice on the court. I can't think of anything I'm more worried about right this second.
Fleming, who specializes in military law, says Ginsburg protected the rights of women, and her most important case was long before she served as a justice.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg argued one of the most significant women's rights cases that ever has been before the Supreme Court.
That case was Frontiero versus Richardson.
All military lawyers are familiar with the case because as a result of that case, the military was forced to allow women who were married to civilians to obtain the same spousal benefits that men who were married to civilians obtained. And that was huge.
Fleming says men who married civilians were given generous housing allowances because their wives were considered dependents. But male spouses were not, so women received very little, if nothing, for their spouses. Fleming says there were also limits on the number of women who could serve in the military, and Ginsburg's lawsuit changed all that.
Because she cares about the little person, and the little person is not getting a good shake these days.
Ginsburg was a role to Catherine Buchanan. She is now in college, but once served as a judge in Kodiak's youth court, where she assigned students apology letters and community service. Buchanan says what she admired most about Ginsburg was her ability to bring dignity and respect to the minority vote.
Her willingness to stand up for what she believes in, especially in the face of adversity. She was surrounded by people who didn't share her opinions, and she stayed there because she knew she had to be there.
Fleming and Buchanan both say Ginsburg was a watchdog for women's rights and gender equality and one of the country's founding principles, justice and equality for all. Over the last few months, a Facebook group called Save Anchorage has become an organizing place for people with grievances against the Berkowitz administration and the city's largely progressive assembly. It began with neighbors who objected to the city's plan to purchase properties to house the homeless and provide substance treatment, and grew to include people against public health measures like mandatory masking and business closures. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports on how the group has grown into a political force.
Save Anchorage launched around the time the assembly took up the city's plan to purchase four properties for homeless and substance treatment resources. Hundreds protested and testified against the plan, which the city had shaped for over a year with public input, calling it rushed or even illegal. Assemblywoman Jamie Allard, who opposed the purchases, says she spread the word about the city's plan, prompting concern from residents in Midtown, where two of the properties are located.
And from there, they established the Save Anchorage site and moved forward with getting the public involved. And I supported that and had attended a few meetings to make sure that they knew exactly what was going on, and it escalated.
By the time the property purchase plan was approved in August, members of the group had taken on other issues, opposing the citywide mask order, restrictions on indoor dining, gathering limitations, and potential use of the Benbokie Ice Arena as a homeless shelter. Large protests outside assembly chambers gathered everyone from business owners to hockey players.
We are not Portland. We are not Seattle. We are not New York. We are Alaska.
I think what happened is that you had particular groups of people that got upset about one thing, decided that they better pay attention, and then upon paying attention realized, oh my goodness, there's like 10 other reasons I have to be upset as well.
That's Bernadette Wilson, a local businesswoman and frequent speaker at Save Anchorage rallies. Wilson says Save Anchorage is a grassroots movement of people who feel ignored and even lied to by local government. She says many supporters are people who have never voted or participated in politics before.
And what's unifying them is the sudden realization that the policies and politics of the left is destroying the city that we once knew.
For many political observers, the anger and sustained motivation of Save Anchorage is unprecedented.
I've never seen anything quite like this up here.
Mike Porcaro is a media consultant and conservative talk radio host in Anchorage. While the majority of the demonstrations have remained peaceful, a handful of protesters have at times become confrontational. After an assembly meeting in August, a small group followed Berkowitz and two aides into the parking lot, jostling them and blocking them from their car. Some members of Save Anchorage have used name-calling and personal attacks against the mayor and left-leaning assembly members in person and on social media.
I mean, there is visceral dislike, and it shouldn't be beyond, you know, political situation. It shouldn't be personal, but I'm starting to see it become personal, and that's a little troubling. I mean, you don't have to like somebody for what they're doing as a leader, but leave it at that.
The 9,000-member Facebook page, which is now private, has also contributed to a spread of misinformation about the pandemic, the city's public health measures, the homelessness situation, and other issues. Assemblyman Forrest Dunbar, who is also running for mayor next year, says the group has been fueled by conservative media, most prominently blogger Suzanne Downing's website, Must Read Alaska.
Suzanne Downing, for example, she wrote that the Golden Line property is going to be a homeless shelter. That's not the case. But very quickly, it became sort of the gospel in her neck of the woods. And she has a certain reach amongst the population of folks that are now supporting David Bronson or part of Save Anchorage or what have you. And then you start to get those emails over and over and over.
The city plans to use the Golden Lion as a substance treatment center with supportive housing. Downing says she stands by her article and has no idea whether her blog has encouraged the group. Dave Bronson is a conservative mayoral candidate who has a lot of Save Anchorage supporters. Mayor Berkowitz goes a step further than Dunbar, arguing that Save Anchorage isn't purely grassroots, but the product of conservative political orchestration and calculated misinformation campaigns.
There are people who genuinely disagree with what I'm doing, but a lot of the anger that's been whipped up here has been done through some very orchestrated means, and it is not genuine grassroots, but more astroturf in its nature.
It's not clear how broadly the group's views are shared in Anchorage, but observers like Porcaro point to the Alaska Republican primary last month, in which voters chose several hardline conservative challengers over more moderate incumbents. People are angry, he says. They don't feel heard, and they're looking to make some changes. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
The Alaska Department of Health and Human and Social Services has notified the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center for a positive test for COVID-19 associated with the Kodiak Island Borough. One new case has been reported for the Kodiak Island Borough. This case is a person who traveled to Kodiak Island and began quarantine upon arrival. This person is in isolation. Staff from the Department of Public Health will remain in contact with the individual to ensure self-isolation and care. This brings the case count associated with the Kodiak Island Borough to 73. One case is currently classified as active. The new commander of Eielson Air Force Base says the process of bringing 54 new F-35 fighters is going smoothly despite the challenges presented by the COVID-19 pandemic. Colonel David Berkland says, in addition to overseeing that process, he's also working to transform the culture at Eielson from one that prioritizes training to one that focuses on readiness to deploy units to combat on short notice. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Colonel David Berkland came to Eielson last month after serving a tour at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan to assume command of the 354th Fighter Wing here. And while he's been getting settled in, he's also been preparing the base for the thousands of people who'll be coming into the interior with the F-35s by the end of next year.
By the end of this, when we have 54 F-35s on the ramp, we're expecting somewhere around 3,500 personnel, and that includes family members, spouses, kids, as well as civilians and contractors.
Berkland says 9 F-35s have arrived at Eielson since the first two flew in back in April. He says there was a lot of concern back then about keeping the influx on schedule because of Pentagon-imposed coronavirus precautions that halted movement of personnel or materiel, including the advanced stealth jet fighters being built at a factory in Texas by Lockheed Martin.
That has been lifted, and we have resumed flowing in people, equipment, to include the aircraft coming off the line at Fort Worth. So we're on track.
While he oversees that process, Berkland says he's also begun emphasizing a change in the culture at Eielson that must come with a change in mission. In this case, that means refocusing the mindset of people who work and live on the base from one dedicated mainly to training to one mainly oriented toward deployment for combat. That's the mission of the two F-35 squadrons.
Hey, we are no longer a garrison mentality. We are no longer a training wing. We are a combat wing with a warfighting mentality, and that's what we message to the airmen.
Berkland says training remains an essential mission at Eielson. He says the base conducted a logistics exercise earlier this month to determine its readiness to deploy the F-35s and their crews and equipment to hotspots around the Pacific Ocean or elsewhere on short notice. He says bigger exercises like Red Flag will continue to be based out of Eielson, and the F-35s will give U.S. and Allied pilots experience flying with or against the so-called fifth-generation fighters.
Integrating with fifth-generation airplanes is a rare opportunity for, you know, our joint team here in the U.S., but as well as our partners across the Pacific that get to come in and play in a Red Flag and work with fifth-gen F-35s.
Eielson's F-35s got their first chance to participate in Red Flag last month, and Berkland says aircraft are already beginning to arrive for the next round of Red Flag coming up next month. Those include F-16s from Mizawa Air Base in Japan and F-18s from Marine Corps Air Station Miramar in California. Reporting from Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
It's going to take Donlin Gold a little longer to get a final decision on whether they will receive the state's right-of-way lease for its gas pipeline. The lease grants Donlin permission to build its pipeline over state-owned lands. The Alaska Department of Natural Resources is reviewing its lease after Alaska Native tribes claimed the state failed to account for the cumulative effects of the 315-mile pipeline. KYUK's Christy Schallenberger has more.
State officials say they decided to review the lease after a handful of tribes raised concerns that the agency didn't consider all the impacts from the pipeline that stretches from Cook Inlet over the Alaska Range and into the upper Kuskokwim region. Five tribes from the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta and South Central regions praised the decision to review the right-of-way lease decision, but Department of Natural Resources spokesperson Dan Sadler says the agency still stands behind its original decision to grant Donlin Gold the lease in January.
We hope that by additional conversation about it, we can make that clear to everybody.
So you know, we're just taking more time to make sure that everyone agrees with the decision we made and give people the opportunity to read it more thoroughly and to comment again if they'd like to.
The pipeline is part of the massive infrastructure Donlin Gold needs to build before it can start operating its mine. The pipeline would ship gas from Cook Inlet up to the mine site, where it would fuel a gas power plant that powers Donlin's operations. Donlin Gold has said residents in the nearby villages could tap the pipeline to fuel their homes instead of relying on expensive diesel fuel. But the tribes that object say the pipeline is too risky. The pipeline would cross streams that could house fish and possibly hurt subsistence hunting and fishing. Mark Springer is the executive director of the Ruchikahinyut Native Council in Bethel, and he praised the decision to review the lease again.
And what would you see as the ideal outcome coming from the additional review?
Is it the right of way wouldn't be granted?
Springer says the outcome ONC ultimately wants is no mine at all. But DNR Sadler says that DNR is likely not going to stop the project from moving forward in the permitting process. Sadler says the agency's regulatory structure is not designed to stop it.
The public gets a chance to opportunity to comment, but we can't guarantee that everyone's going to get their own way all the time.
So far, DNR is only accepting public comments and has no plans to schedule a public hearing. Sadler says the state has already gone, quote, above and beyond with 11 public hearings over the pipeline.
There is no statutory requirement to have more public hearings on the remand decision. In fact, the law is kind of silent on that.
The public has until November 9th to submit their written comments to DNR. Sadler says people need to focus on how DNR considered the cumulative impacts of the pipeline in their comments. For KYUK News, I'm Christy Schallenberger.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
And by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, proud to offer a variety of sofas and love seats made in Oregon by Stanton, as well as massage and zero-gravity chairs by Human Touch. Find the fabric and style that fits your lifestyle in the store or by special order. Also featuring inviting rugs, lamps, and accessories for your home at Ardinger's, 486-5554.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Recycle your worn and torn fishing bibs into upscale bags. More after this.
Did you know that eating wild and sustainable Alaska seafood can boost your immune system? Learn more about Alaska seafood's many proven nutritional benefits at wildalaskaseafood.com.
Hose off those worn and torn fishing bibs and recycle them into rugged sea bags and more. A Maine fishing family needs more bibs for its Rugged Seas line, launched at the popular Fisherman's Forum in March. Since then, the bib gear has taken off.
People are really excited about it. I mean, we've had people send us their bibs from Canada, from Rhode Island, up and down the East Coast, from Washington State. It's been really exciting.
Nikki Strout co-owns Rugged Seas with her husband, Taylor, a lifelong lobsterman who also has fished out of Dutch Harbor since 2012. Nikki says he was inspired by all the fishery-related hoodies and T-shirts he saw there and started designing similar wear for Maine.
And so we were trying to think of something that each fishery has that, you know, is very identifiable, and we thought of bibs. We thought, what do guys do with their bibs when they just throw them away? Is there a way that we could repurpose these used bibs?
The Strouts also connected with well-known oilskin maker Guy Cotton to take all their remnants for Rugged Seas gear. A portion of all sales goes to local fishing groups, and Nikki says it's all about highlighting the lifestyle.
It's a hard lifestyle. The work they do, and then being a family that, you know, we haven't seen Taylor in 8 weeks now, it's tough. So to kind of tell a story with every bag we make, that's the whole goal.
Strout says a goal is to get bib drop barrels in Alaska fishing towns, but for now they'll offer free Rugged Seas gear to cover the costs of shipping them to Maine.
they can ship directly to us, and I would be very happy to send some free gear out to anybody who wants to donate their old bibs or jackets or whatever they have.
Visit ruggedseas.com and find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Let's start out with a brand spanking new fish and game message.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 41, date issued September 21st at 10 a.m. There will be a 78-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, September 22nd, to 6 p.m. Friday, September 25th, in the following areas. In the Outer Iqaluit section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Afognak District, except for the Outer Katoy Bay and Izuit Bay sections, remain open until further notice, and the Inner Katoy Bay section remains closed. The Mainland District, the Sheratine Bay, Anton Larson Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Inner Uganic Bay, Spiridon Bay, Zacher Bay, and Uyak Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Eastside Kodiak District, and the Northeast Kodiak District. As previously announced, the following areas remain open until further notice: the Outer Katoy Bay section and Izuit Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Outer Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, and the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, and the Humpy Dead Man, Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District. Until further notice, in that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak District, south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations. And statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Thank you. Well, today is Monday. It is the 21st day of September, the year 2020. Sun rose today at 7:52. It'll set again at 8:13, giving us 12 hours and 15 minutes of daylight. That is a loss of 4 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. We have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 5:24 p.m. It's going to be a 9.8-foot tide. We had a low tide at 11:06. That was a 1-foot tide. The next low tide will be at 11:58 p.m., right at midnight. It's going to be a minus 0.5-foot tide. And your high tide tomorrow morning will be at 6:21 a.m., a 7.3 feet. On the west side, you just had a low tide at 11:48. That was a 0.4-foot tide. Your next high tide will be at 5:49 this evening of 16.8 feet. And you'll have a low tide or a high tide, or your low tide will be at 12:24 a.m., a minus 1.3 feet. And your high tide tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 6:41 this morning or tomorrow morning. 14.3 foot tide. 51 degrees, a little rainy and showery. Look for the conditions you see outside to go on for the rest of the week. Mariners, be aware. We do have gale warnings on both sides of the island offshore. Small craft advisories for Chiniak and Marmot Bay. For Chiniak Bay, east wind to 30 knots right now and seas to 6 feet. For tomorrow, look for northeast winds at 30 knots, seas to 8 feet. For Marmot Bay, northeast winds to 30 knots right now and seas to 7 feet. We'll build to 12 feet this afternoon. For tomorrow, northeast 30 in Marmot Bay, seas to 12 feet. For Kodiak offshore east side, gale warning today and Tuesday, east wind to 35 knots right now and seas to 11 feet. For tomorrow, look for north wind to 20 knots except northeast 35 north of Dangerous Cape, seas to 14 feet. Over in the Shelikof, gale warning through Tuesday, northeast wind to 40 knots right now in the Shelikof, 4-0. Seas will build to 12 feet this afternoon. For tomorrow, look for north wind to 40 knots, seas to 16 feet in the Shelikof. Ports and Harbor Advisory Board will hold a meeting tomorrow. That will begin at 12 p.m. in Fisherman's Hall, and the meeting's open to the public. For more information, call Ports and Harbor office at 486-8080. The Kodiak City Council will hold a special meeting tomorrow. That meeting will begin at 7 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library Multipurpose Room. In addition, the Kodiak City Council will hold a work session at 7:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library tomorrow. Both meetings are open to the public, but you will be asked to wear a mask and social distance. For more information, call 486-8636. And the Kodiak, the Kodiak City Council will hold a regular council meeting on Thursday. That meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers. Please wear a mask and social distance.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.